Are you tired?
Welcome back to The Lawn Hustle. I am your host, Andy Wilson. I own and operate Professional Lawn Maintenance in Newcastle, Indiana. We're doing a podcast series titled Meet the Pros. And today I have a special guest with us, Mr. Paul Jamison. He has 122,000 followers on Instagram, 65,700 followers on TikTok, 18,600 subscribers on YouTube. He is a five-time best-selling author, written books, Cut That Grass and Make That Cash, and his latest book, How to Build a Thriving Landscape Business. Paul, thank you for joining the show today. I appreciate you.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, from what I have learned about you, I would say there are three things that you are passionate about. Number one, your relationship with Jesus Christ. Number two, the green industry. And number three, golf.
There you go.
So let me ask you a golf question right out of the gate. What's your best 18 hole score? And have you ever hit a hole in one?
Okay, my best 18 hole score is 68. I did that multiple times. And then I've never got a hole in one. And putt-putt I have. I played with my buddy Naylor down in Orlando. I think I had three or four hole-in-ones on putt-putt. He was like, dang, he didn't have any. But I've never got a hole-in-one. I did shoot 33 in a tournament before on the back nine to qualify for an event. I had a 38 on the front nine and then a 33 on the back nine and shot 71, but I won the tournament. So that was fun. I birdied the last hole.
That is awesome. I got a hole in one about 25 years ago. I was in Slidell, Louisiana, and it was 138 yard par three. And I teed off, and it was real foggy that morning. But I knew I hit it well, but I couldn't see it because of the fog. And some guys started screaming and jumping up and down. I thought I hit into them. So I jump in the cart and I run up here real quick to apologize. And they said, no, your ball's in the hole. And wow. I walked up there and you could see where it hit right at the lip of the hole and fell right in.
Wow.
So that's my famous golf story. But I don't get to play as much as I used to. Well, let's dive in here to the green industry side of your passion. And let me ask you, you're obviously an influencer, and you have made an impact on hundreds, if not thousands, of businesses across the United States and around the world. Let me ask you, who influences you, and who is your mentor?
Wow, that's really good. I have a few mentors. Obviously, God, that's my biggest mentor, is the Lord, because he gives me big ideas. A lot of times I'll be praising him, and when I'm praising, I'll get these big ideas, and I usually know they're from God, because I was like, I wasn't thinking that, and then all of a sudden, something like in an instant drops into my spirit. That's actually what happened with the Green Industry podcast. There was no Green Industry podcast in August of 2018. I was driving down the highway in Illinois, and it's a whole long story, but I had the idea for the Green Industry podcast, and I saw a vision of me talking about business, and I could see different men in their trucks, in their shops, in kind of like where men in the lawn care industry would be, and they were listening to me. It was on in the background of them grinding blades in the shop or driving down the road in the pickup truck. And So God's my main mentor, and I try to listen to him as best as I can. I have a mentor up in Atlanta that used to go to my – I moved from Atlanta to Florida, but someone who went to my church in Atlanta, him and his wife paid off their home in 2016. His name's Kevin, and he became debt-free in 2016, and he's just a very – he has no limits on his life. He's just – everything he does is successful. His marriage is successful. His children – are respectable people. His finances are just exponentially multiplying because he has no debt and he just invests and his investments grow and he's very wealthy. So I actually talked to him yesterday. He has nothing to do with the green industry, but he asks me challenging questions. He's always asking me about my vision board and what my goals are and like having, never getting complacent, but always having a God-inspired goal that you're pursuing. And so that was motivating talking to him yesterday. A couple days a week, I go to a Bible study here in Atlanta, or pardon me, here in Tampa. I live in Florida now, Tampa, not Atlanta, by a guy named Myron Golden. You might have seen him on YouTube. He's got a white beard, big beard. It's white. He's a black fellow, but his beard's kind of distinct. He's very successful. Most months, he makes over $1 million in just 1 month. Very, very successful fella. So, I sit at his teachings. He records his YouTube videos at a studio in Tampa that I got invited to go sit in the live studio audience, which is a huge honor. But I learn a lot from him, a lot. And then I read a lot of books. So I haven't actually met Dave Ramsey, but I read his books. I didn't meet Benjamin Hardy, but he wrote the book 10X is Easier Than 2X, and that book changed my life. He has a diagram in his book that has at the bottom of the diagram, it has all these lines starting and then they shoot up, but they go to different heights. And then at the top of the chart, he has a rectangle driven drone around the top lines. And there's only a few of the arrows that lines that made it into the top. And his point is there's only a few paths to really achieve this high excellence. And so if you're going to set out for a big goal, you're going to have to say no to so much stuff because you're going to have to be laser focused on that goal. And so books like that really influenced me. And there's several other people. My friend Marlon up in Atlanta, he's a mentor of me. We talk a lot about character, making sure that my life, if your life lines up with God's plan for you, you yield to God, then you become the king of your thing. That's what Myron Golden says, that If you can focus on making sure your life's right, that you're not doing any sins, but you're living squeaky clean, and everything just kind of lines up. The finances start exploding. Everything just kind of comes into purpose. So when I talk to Marlon, we're always talking about character. Like, how can I be living more correctly? Because once that gets aligned, then all the other business stuff, it kind of gets easy. It's just like, it's all... like there's wind at my back when I'm living right.
Right. That is so good. I am a firm believer if you diligently seek the Lord, all these other things will be added unto you. And he will bless you if you bless him and live a life that is a blessing. And I want you to know that your podcast has influenced me tremendously and has made an impact on my life. I'm a daily listener. The very first job we go to, that's the first thing I do, is put my headphones on and listen to the Green Industry Podcast. So thank you for the podcast. I appreciate it.
That's very encouraging. Thank you.
What trends, and you and I both just came from Equip Expo a few weeks back, but what trends do you see shaping our industry?
That's good. Well, batteries obviously only gaining popularity because the big companies are investing a lot of money creating this stuff. All the major players are investing a lot of money into the research and development and then, you know, actually producing the battery powered equipment. So that's only going to increase in, supply, if you will, on the commercial side moving forward. So batteries growing rapidly. Robotics are coming a long way. They're, you know, getting better year after year. And then the technology, with software and stuff like that. I mean, I think every business owner should be using a CRM, and, you know, using technology and software to run your business better. So, battery, robotics, technology, all that stuff is growing. And then social media, I'm not sure if you want to touch on that later, but there's a lot of people in this industry that use social media the right way, and they benefit from it. So just making sure you're making organic posts on Facebook and on social media is important.
Do you feel like battery-powered equipment will eventually eliminate the use of gas-powered equipment?
I don't think anytime soon. And with Trump winning this next 4 years, you know, I don't think that agenda is going to be pushed as hard as it has in the past. So paying attention to the legislation is important, because if a state bans gas, your options are limited. And so I don't pay too much attention to the laws of California and stuff like that. But I've had people on my podcast before that have said they have to switch over to battery powered in a certain time and stuff like that. So my gut says no time soon, but when you start seeing more of the legislation do that, it could be a possibility, but I don't think it's going to be anytime soon.
Okay. I was in California in April, and the Airbnb where we were staying in Los Angeles, across the street, a mowing crew pulled up, and they jumped out and mowed, and a guy fired up a gas-powered backpack blower and blew off the sidewalk and the patio and the driveway. So when we shut the battery-powered or the gas-powered blower off, I went over and I asked him, I said, "When do you all have to go to gas-powered?" He said, "I'm not." He said, "They'll have to catch me using this." So he wasn't a fan yet. And I've got some. Crest sent me a blower. Echo sent me a blower that's battery-powered. My only concern with it is I think they're going to have to improve the battery life of these battery-powered equipment before they'll ever really take over.
Yeah. I live in downtown of a city, and there's big buildings around and stuff like that. So the maintenance company that cleans the skyscraper next to me, they come on Sunday nights because there's no parking, or there's the least amount of parking there than, you know, like on a weekday workday, the place is packed, you know what I mean? So right. A big parking garage deck type thing. And it's annoying because a guy comes at like 8 p.m. on Sunday, and I'm trying to relax and enjoy, you know, peaceful Sunday evening, and then he's got this, I don't know if he has a Ryobi or what, he don't have like a Red Max Echo or Steel, I mean, he's got some, you know, ghetto blower that's not that good, because I was like, what in the world is the guy using out there? But it's still as loud, and he's there for hours, and so I can understand that if you are at home and you're ordering a lawn care service, if the company comes and you barely know they're there, that Crest backpack blower, I have one that's the Crest, and that thing's quiet, even on the full throttle or whatnot, full power.
Right.
It's not that loud. And so I think it's going to just get more and more popular, but the legislation is unfortunately going to dictate a lot.
Are there any misconceptions about our industry that you would like to clear up?
Well, unfortunately, there's a lot of chuck in the trucks, and it's such a low barrier to entry that there's just so many people that don't take their life or business serious. And so that is the fact of the matter. If you look at the trades, electricians and HVAC and basically every other trade other than lawn care and landscaping has a better reputation than ours. We are, if you just talk to a homeowner in a neighborhood of, you know, $600,000 homes, you gave them a survey, the lawn care people would be at the low, you know, the lowest on the totem pole. And probably because it's the easiest to enter, all you really need is a couple thousand bucks to get a backpack blower, a string trimmer, and a lawnmower.
Right.
You don't even need a truck. I started with a Honda Accord. So because it's such a low barrier entry, there's just a lot of people that don't have high character, high IQ, good business acumen to them that are in this industry. Now, with that being said, on my podcast, I have interviewed some studs. Tony Rudolph, we had him at the Equip Expo on the stage.
Right.
He's debt-free. He's married to his beautiful wife. He has two beautiful children. He's got a very, very high level of integrity. And Tony is just a quality, quality, quality human being that all of his customers can trust him on their property, that he's going to behave himself, and that he's going to do quality work. So, and that then there's hundreds of Tony Rudolphs out there. Andy Mulder's one on the landscaping installation side. He's up in your state, Indiana, correct?
Yes.
So Andy Mulder, debt-free, man of character, man of integrity, hard worker, multimillionaire, just very, very, very successful. So the misconception is everybody's like the Chuck in the truck. They're not. There's people out there that are like Tony Rudolph in Georgia. They're like Andy Mulder in Indiana. They're just hardworking men that serve their family, serve their community, and are very wealthy. Tony's net worth is over $500,000. And then Andy's, I don't know how much Andy's net worth actually is. I just know in cash he had over $1 million about a year ago when he called Dave Ramsey and asked him what he did with the savings account with over $1 million in it. And in addition to that, his home's paid for, all of his skid steers and equipment and trucks, all that's paid for. So he's definitely worth multiple millions of dollars. So the misconception is that people are like chucking the truck, and those guys are out there and unfortunately are the majority in the industry. But as the host of the Green Industry podcast, I found some absolute gems, and the majority of people that I interview are go-getters.
Right.
They just work hard. They work very, very, very hard. And so, and it inspires me. I talked to my friend Brian Fullerton up in Michigan. He's always got a new endeavor. He's hustling, he's working. I talked to my friend Mitchell Gordy in North Carolina. He's a state trooper by day or night. Then he's, cleaning up someone's gravel driveway with his tractor the next day. Mike Garvey up there in New Jersey, he's a state trooper, New Jersey. And then he has a fertilization and weed control business. There's just so many hardworking people out there. My favorite of them all is Jason Creel. He's in Alabama. Just a quality man, good husband, four kids. And he just is solo. He just works solo on a fertilizer business. And the man's a high, high, high integrity person. Just he's always making the right decision and concerned about making the right decision and treating people the right way. So that kind of summarizes it. I would say the Jason Creoles, Tony Rudolphs, Andy Mulders, and guys with those high-level characters, there's a lot of them out there.
Yeah. Tony's a friend of mine. I was on his podcast, and someone got a hold of him and said, here, listen to this podcast. So you got to go to episode number one first, because I explained my cancer diagnosis and what all I went through. So Tony emailed me and said, I got to get you on my podcast. So we've been friends ever since. Tony's a great guy. And I just interviewed Brian Fullerton a few days ago for this series of Meet the Pros for my podcast. And he's a great guy. And some of the guys you've mentioned, I've casually met. I really don't know them, but they all seem like quality people. I believe our industry has some of the greatest minds and some of the greatest people in the workforce. And you hit the nail right on the head. That is the biggest misconception in our business, is you do lawn care because you couldn't find a job anyplace else. So That's a misconception. We have some great minds.
Yeah, and I have a friend, Jonathan Potoshnik. His net worth is over $100 million, which is nine figures. Yeah. And they do fertilization and weed control. They do, I believe they do pest control. They do irrigation. And then they do basic lawn mowing. Works in the garden beds. So very simple services. He doesn't do any fancy retaining walls. He doesn't do any patio pavers, which there's nothing wrong with those things. Lots of my audience does the hardscaping, but he does the basic services of irrigation, mowing, fertilization, weed control. And I think they do some tree pruning, but he does the basic services, and he has over $100 million net worth. His lawn business does over $15 million per year at the City Turf in North Dallas. And then he also built a CRM for our industry that he sold for a lot of money, Service Autopilot. But when I get to hang out with him, I feel like Superman. Like, I just feel so energized and full of wisdom. And there's a Bible verse. I don't know the address of it, but it's about through knowledge, the just are delivered. Something along those lines about you get knowledge, and then it gives you deliverance in your life. It gives you freedom in your life. And when I hang out with Jonathan, that happens to me. My brain gets rewired. I get the knowledge that he shares with me, and then it brings this freedom and this buoyancy and this excitement and this energy inside of me where it's like I can't even sleep because I'm so excited for the next day. It's like Christmas morning tomorrow. I'm like, I'm just too excited.
Yeah.
But I know I got to get a little bit of rest, but I'm ready to go conquer the world. And his nickname's JP, but he's the most successful person. I've been to his house. I've seen his lifestyle. He keeps it very private, but he's loaded. And it's all from the green industry. There's a lot of people in this industry that don't fit that stereotype of the guy who can't get a real job, so he just mows grass.
Right. Well, I'm interviewing Naylor Monday night for this series of podcasts, and I love the way he calls himself the lawn care rookie. He says he's always learning, and I love that about him. I don't want to ever get to the place where I ever think I've reached it or I know it all. I want to always be educating myself.
Yeah, and I don't want to be hanging out with anybody who, if they have a sense of a smell of them that they act like that, forget about it. I want to be hanging around people like Naylor, who's on fire.
Right.
The man's, when you talk to him on Monday night, out of all the people I know right now, and where Naylor's at in his stage of life, he is on fire. The text he sends me, the conversations we have, the man is on fire right now. He's had a few things unlocked in his life, and he's getting promoted rapidly. So I'm excited for your conversation with him, and I want to hang around people like that who
right.
are humble, who are learning, who are submitting themselves to people who are further ahead than them, and learning, and then implementing what they're learning. And you start getting around some people that have a little bit of success, and they just, that's toxic. I was on social media very, very, very briefly today. I try not to consume any social media. I just produce. But I had opened TikTok to make my post for the day. I have a golf channel on TikTok, Paul Jamison Golf. I started it last week. But when I was on there was some 23-year-old talking about how he retired at age 23, and he's sitting on the balcony with like the ocean behind him. I got so mad. I'm like, you're 23 years old. I was like, I just got so mad because I was like, God did not create you to retire at age 23. Like, he put us on this earth to serve people.
Rabbi Lapin.
People like Donald Trump, who's 78 years old, and that man's, you know, running for president won the presidency now. So now he's preparing to be the president of the United States at age 78. Warren Buffett, he's in his mid-90s. I don't know exactly how old he is, but I know he's in his 90s, and the man's still working.
Right.
The man still goes to work on Monday morning.
Yeah.
So those guys get it. Warren Buffett gets it. I'm not saying all of his thoughts about life are appropriate, but his effort to put into work and Donald Trump's effort to put into work, I was so mad at this 23-year-old. I was like, even if financially you got enough money that you technically didn't, you know, you could live off of that money, God put us here for a purpose. And that 23-year-old sitting on that balcony bragging about how rich he is, he's not living in the purpose that God has for him. He's foolish. And anyway,
I think we're put here on earth to serve people and to be a servant and to have that servant attitude and that servant mentality. How can I serve my community? How can I serve my family? How can I serve my friends? And it's not just working and making money. It's a ministry. How am I serving my people? And, you know, the Bible says, whatever you find to do, do it with all of your might, you know, whatever your hands find to do. And I feel like even my lawn care business here locally is a ministry in my community, because I'm helping my clients beautify their property. I'm helping my city look better. So I want to always have a servant mentality and a spirit of a servant, and do it with a spirit of excellence.
Yeah, so that's the recipe for success. Jesus said that whoever's going to be the greatest is going to be the servant.
Right.
The better you are at serving, the greater you are in God's kingdom. And then you don't have to be a Christian to apply that. Jeff Bezos, I don't know where he stands with God, but he took that principle that Jesus taught and he applied it. If you watch an early interview with Jeff Bezos from Amazon, all he talked about was serving the customer better. How can we serve the customer better? How can we, when he used to look like a nerd, and you know, it's like, if you can find on YouTube these old Jeff Bezos interviews, they would ask him a question and he would turn it back to, how can we serve the customer better? How can we serve the customer better? And because of that obsession of serving the customer better, Amazon created this store where you can shop in one or two clicks, convenient as you can be, you can buy something. And then depending on where you live, when I lived in Atlanta, it was very easy to order something in the morning and actually get it by the afternoon.
Right.
Other places you can order it and get it the next day or 2 days later. But all of that was based out of Jeff Bezos connected to a biblical principle. He didn't realize that, but you know, I don't think he would acknowledge, oh, well, I just followed what Jesus said, but he did. He followed the principle of being a servant. And in the early days of Amazon, there was an obsession about serving the customer. And you watch those interviews, it was like he was a record just on repeat. They'd ask a question and he'd be like, how can we serve the customer better? We got to serve the customer better. They'd ask him about a different business angle. He's like, well, how can we serve the better customer better? And when we can become a servant, then God can elevate us, because you're helping people, whether you're mowing someone's grass or you're making them a cup of coffee or you're painting someone's wall in their house or you're, you know, making them a piece of pizza, a burger, whatever you do. If you do it well and serve the customer well, then they'll pay you money for that. And that's how you become wealthy. You serve people well, and then you just manage that money.
And whatever you go to do, you do it as unto the Lord. And you treat every customer like they're your most important customer. And that's what I've tried to do, and that's what's helped me build a good client business relationship with the people that I work for. It's because whether it's a little old lady or a wealthy couple, I try to treat every job as if that's my most important job. And I think that's important for people to do that kind of thing. What keeps you passionate about lawn care and landscaping?
Well, the relationships, I could name a list of, you know, 25, 30 people of the relationships that I've built in this industry. I know previously in the conversation I mentioned my friend Jonathan Potoshnik. I've mentioned Naylor. I've mentioned Jason Creole, Fullerton, Tony Rudolph, Andy Mulder. The list goes on and on and on and on and on and on. So the majority of my best friends are in this industry. And some of them are in fertilization and weed control. Some of them are in, you know, software. Some of them are in hardscaping. Some of them are in landscaping. I'm well diversified within the green industry, but I've just met so many quality people that it inspires me to be a better person. And then when I hear testimonies from you and Tony Rudolph and some of these other guys, Kevin Salters up north, he sent me an email yesterday saying how much he's been enjoying the podcast we did from the John Deere booth. We did 18 episodes from the John Deere booth. But that stuff motivates me.
Right.
To when I hear someone, Kevin Salters is a very, very successful, wealthy man, and he's listening to me, it puts pressure on me to serve him better, to serve you better, to serve Tony better. And these men that I know are listening, you know, frequently, it inspires me to produce excellence in broadcasting that we add value to the listener. So,
well, your podcast is top shelf. It's great. And I can't tell you how much I've learned from it and how I've applied it to how I operate my business. And I feel like my business is better today because of you and because of the podcast. And not only yours, there's others that I listen to every day, but you have made such an impact on my life. I've read your books, and I just want you to know I appreciate you. I appreciate you coming on the show. What role does sustainability play in our businesses?
Can you explain sustainability? What you mean by that?
What is going to make us stay for the long run in our business? Are we going to, in other words, what do we have to do, or what should we be doing to keep us in the business?
Yeah, that's a good question. I last week at Myron Golden's Bible study YouTube recording, I met this gentleman, and he's like, "Hey, I got to introduce you to this 14-year-old kid over here." My friend Ryan connected me with this 14-year-old kid. His name's Asher. And I met Asher, and he's like, "Yeah, I got 15 accounts." And I was like, "You don't even have a driver's license." His voice still sounds like he might not have even hit puberty yet, you know what I mean? Or maybe at least the early onset of puberty. I mean, he sounds like a little kid, you know what I mean? Have you ever heard of like a young boy talk, and he's sitting there talking about 15 customers? I was like, "This is amazing, dude." I was like, You don't have a driver's license, do you? And he's like, "No." He's like, "We put the weed eater in a wheelbarrow with whatever other hand, you know, power equipment we have goes in a wheelbarrow, and one guy will push the wheelbarrow to the next customer's house, and then you know, the other guy will push the mower. So there's a 2-man crew out there, no driver's license, and then not going to get one for years to come down here in Florida." So. But his dad asked me in front of him, he's like, "What advice do you have for my son who's 14? And kind of put me on the spot. But I was like, "Well, number one, you want to build your business to sell it one day. Because a lot of these bigger companies, they buy the smaller companies. And they run the company through their machine, and they can really, you know, find an ROI off of that." So I think you should build your business that when you go to sell it one day, then you might think, "Oh, I'm never going to sell it. I'm going to give it to my kid." Well, your kid might not be passionate about lawn care, and he might want to sell it one day. So at some point, it's going to dissolve or get sold. It's not going to be around 200 years from now. You know what I mean?
Right.
So build it to sell it. And by doing that, you want to have a CRM, so you have all of your job records of every time you maintenance Smith's yard, you have a documented record that on this date, at this time, you provided this service for this customer for this amount. And any of the major CRMs is going to take care of that information as long as you input it into the CRM. And the CRMs are just getting better and better. So I told the 14-year-old kid, I asked him, "Do you have a CRM?" And he, you know, he, those three letters meant nothing to him. You know what I mean? He's like, what's that? You know? So I explained to him, it's a customer relationship manager, because if you have your business for 10 years and you go to sell it one day and you can prove to the company that you're selling it to, for 10 years, here's our work history. That's a lot of value to that company buying you, because they know who your customers are. They have that work history. So the other thing to be sustainable is you have to be making money. So I explained to this 14-year-old kid, I was like, open up a business checking account and put 100% of your revenue into that business checking account, so you have a very true and honest income that you know exactly how much money your lawn business makes. Exactly to the penny, you'll know, we made X amount of dollars last year. And then in that same business umbrella or business account, have all of your expenses come out. So for your fuel, for your new string trimmer, for your new lawnmower, for your repair for your lawnmower, any business expense, make sure that that comes out of the business account. So that way, this 14-year-old kid at the end of the year can have a profit and loss statement, essentially, of here was his income, here was his outgo, and then the goal is to be profitable. So that's, those profits are what's going to sustain you long term. When you have cash in the business and profits, then you have opportunities to hire better people, get better equipment, pay yourself extra money so that you can invest into a Roth IRA or, you know, whatever investment that you find is the smartest way to take advantage of compound interest and stuff like that. But you have to have the money to do that. So I really think knowing your numbers and then being as profitable as possible, it's exciting when you're making money. It just gives you a lot more opportunities. So really getting organized with the data on when you serve a customer, that you have all of that documented in your CRM, and then your business accounting and finances is clean, so you know exactly how profitable you are. Or unfortunately for some people, when you start keeping track of all this, you're going to realize you're not profitable. But that's a good wake-up call. I've had that wake-up call a couple times.
Yeah.
And it scared me to get it together.
It's not easy to look at the numbers and realize I got to do something different. I got to make a change in my business and how I operate so I become more profitable. Sometimes it's not easy to look at those bottom lines and realize that you're not, you know, where you want to be. And you got to be willing to make those changes. And I think an important thing, too, is make sure you pay yourself and pay yourself well. Know what you're worth and pay yourself. Take that right out of your top dollar income to where you know where your true number is at the bottom dollar.
Spot on. I couldn't agree more. And my bookkeeper, Joey Coberly, couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Well, I want to be mindful of your time. I could probably keep you on here for another couple of hours with all the questions I have, but maybe we can record another one in the future. But we've been going for 38 minutes now, so I want to be mindful of your time, and I want you to know how much I appreciate you coming on my show. It really means a lot to me.
You're welcome. Thanks for the invitation, and I'm grateful for it. I have a few more minutes if you had any other questions. I gotta go at 4:45, but I'd be happy to chat a few more minutes if you had any other questions.
Well, I think you answered pretty much the one question I had, was what advice would you give someone starting out in the green industry? And I think, you know, get a CRM, know your numbers, route density, all of those things that we talk about all the time. But is there something else that you would say to someone that is just starting out?
Well, the 14-year-old didn't have much options on the route density because he doesn't have a car. So there's like, there's only his amount of, you know, area that he can cover with pushing the wheelbarrow all day. So he's only in the neighborhood that his parents live in. So that, you know, he's mastered route density. All of his 15 customers are in his parents' neighborhood, which is good, you know, which is definitely good. There's a graph that Dave Ramsey puts out, and it shows if you invest at age 21 versus if you start at age 30 into just a Roth IRA, you put it in, invested, I think, in the S&P 500. The graph is astonishing because the guy who starts investing at age 21, according to this graph, he stops, I forget at what age, but he only invests for like 10 years. But he ended up with millions more than the guy who started investing at age 30 and invested all the way till age 70 or whatever. So my number one piece of advice to the 14-year-old, to anybody listening, because I have a lot, I know we're older folks, but there's a lot of teenagers that listen to my podcast and guys that are 20-somethings. When you're growing your business, the last thing to increase is your lifestyle. So what an immature, foolish person does is they have, you know, they do a good job, they make a little bit of money or a lot of money, and they go out and they buy a Corvette, or they go out and they buy whatever the fancy thing is to increase the lifestyle. If you could keep your lifestyle where it's, you know, reasonable, but it's not extravagant in the early days, and you can start investing into a Roth IRA, your max out your Roth IRA and put that into a good investment, or something as simple as the, I think the total index fund is called VTEI, or the S&P 500 is called VOO. But if you start that at, you know, a young age, and you're obsessed with investing, then when you're older, you're going to be so wealthy because of compound interest. And I just didn't have an older person really put pressure on me to do that. I had one guy, Mike Draper, guy is awesome. We would go golfing every now and again, and he'd always be like, "Paul, that's the devil. That's the devil." That was his line. "That's the devil." He's like, "Start investing $100 a month into a mutual fund. Start investing $100 a month into a mutual fund." So he told me that, but it went in this ear and it went out that ear. If I had 100 extra bucks, I spent it at Wendy's on a junior bacon cheeseburger and french fries and new Titleist Pro V1 golf balls and just, you know, whatever it was to, that wasn't an investment. And I had a high school teacher talk about a Roth IRA, but it went in this ear and went out the other ear. So I just really wish when I was younger, I would have someone who really like sat me down, was like, "No, Paul, you're not increasing your lifestyle until first your $7,000 a year is in your Roth IRA, and that's invested in a good mutual fund or the S&P 500. So you 18-year-old kids out there listening, you 21-year-old kids out there listening, you 20-somethings out there listening, don't increase your lifestyle yet. Invest your money in assets that appreciate. That's what rich people do, is they invest in things that appreciate, which means that they put their money in things that go up in value. So real estate, like a home, 9 out of 10 times is going to go up in value,
right,
unless it's in a really bad area. The stock market, if you look at the graph of the stock market compared to the 1970s, 80s, 90s, in the 2000s, it's all, you know, it's only gone up, 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 up. So if your money's invested in the stock market, if your money's invested in real estate, it's going up. A lot of the people out there invest, not only invest, but they spend their money on things that go down in value. Vehicles go down in value. You know, the other things go down in value. So just be careful of when you increase your lifestyle. My friend Jonathan Potoshnik, who's worth over $100 million. Now he has the fancy cars and the crazy home that Naylor and I have been to, but that wasn't until more recently. He kept his lifestyle. He never got close to the edge. He always lived way, way, way below his means. And I just think that is the number one thing I wish I would have known when I was in my earlier years. Because when you're an entrepreneur, you are going to make money, but you can't spend everything you make,
right?
Or you'll be experiencing emotions and stress and anxiety that you don't need to be putting yourself through. So,
there's one thing that I've noticed about Jonathan Potoshnik. He seems to me to be a humble man. Even though he has $100 million or whatever it is.
More than $100 million. Yeah, I'm being conservative. Yeah. He's in between $100 million and a billion. He's not a billionaire, but he's got more than $100 million.
But he's humble. He seems like, you know, when I listen to you interview him, he never comes across like, listen to me because I'm Jonathan Petoschnik. It's like, listen to me because I've got some advice that will help you grow, help you reach a financial goal. And I like humble people. I like you. I think you're a humble man. So, you know, I think Dave Ramsey says, save like no other so you can live like no other. And my wife and I, we're on the Dave Ramsey journey. We have been for a while now. And we paid off $10,000 in credit card debt. We paid off a van 3 years early. And our home will be paid off in 2 years, which will be about 10 years early. So we're working hard to do that. But you gave us some outstanding advice tonight. I appreciate it. And Tony Rudolph told me, he said, when I meet somebody and we become friends, we're friends for life. So I'm going to borrow that from Tony and say that to you. When we meet, when we become friends, we're friends for life. And I want you to know I've prayed for you. I've asked God to protect you because we need you in this industry. And when the hurricane came through and you stayed home instead of evacuating because of a lack of gas in the area, I prayed that night, God, put a hedge of protection around him. Protect him, keep him safe, keep him free from harm and danger, because we need his voice in our industry. And I mean that. I'm not just saying that to try to butter you up or anything. I sincerely believe we need your voice, and I appreciate you. And I, again, thank you for joining the Lawn Hustle.
You're welcome. That's deeply encouraging. I appreciate the kind words. It definitely is encouraging. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, until we talk again, thank you for joining, and I hope to talk to you again real soon. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Have a good one.